I'm Rosie Knight.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Source, the pop culture podcast where we drink Bloody Marys and ruin the stuff that you love.
We have a great show that we're really excited about today. We're going to talk about this whole controversy with Bill Maher and also Kathy Griffin, both of whom did things that got them a lot of flack this past week. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to cover some of the worst takes on Wonder Woman that we've read since the movie came out. And we also have our very first ever Hot Sauce Award.
Yes.
For someone who did something cool that we're impressed by. And then I think finally we'll talk about some stuff we've been watching that we've really enjoyed and just wanted to recommend.
Yeah, it's a very nice full show. We're going to start with the bad stuff and go on to the good stuff, which is always a nice way to do it.
Exactly. So what are you drinking this week?
I am drinking, in a very classy fashion, a cup of what is called a porn star martini. It's when I used to work in a bar, it's like one of the most popular drinks, and it's basically mango with vodka and then fizzy wine, like a Prosecco or something. And you usually have that on the side, but I've worked out a way to just put it all in one cup.
You figured that out, did you?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. It sounds intriguing. I'm a little disappointed that this is our third episode and you haven't yet been drinking a Bloody Mary.
I know. I've really let the side down. I need to just go to the store and commit to my good Bloody Mary ingredients.
You know, you could get a mix. I wouldn't criticize it.
That's a good point. I think I'm making a commitment to you and our listeners, and now they'll have heard it this week, that I will have a Bloody Mary next week.
All right. As will I. I'm actually not drinking a Bloody Mary either this week. I'm drinking wine. It's a very fine and rare vintage known as the wine in the cardboard box from Trader Joe's.
My favorite.
Yeah, it's actually very good. I enjoy it. It's very affordable. It comes in a large box, so it's voluminous. One of my favorite wine qualities. So I'm on my third glass, so that's going well.
Oh, it's very impressive.
So, Rosie, what did you watch or read this past week?
I've mostly been watching a lot of Pam Grier movies.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, we had a good we got a good streaming service that has like a bunch of her old movies. So I watched Foxy Brown again, which is my favorite, along with Coffee. And today we watched Sheba, which is like amazing. So yeah, I love she's like my Wonder Woman celebration because she's just such a badass. And that was like one of the first like strong women I ever saw in films. What about you? Have you been enjoying anything particularly?
Well, I did go to the movies. I saw this little independent film that not a lot of people have probably heard of, but it's called Wonder Woman. Yeah, I did see Wonder Woman. And enjoyed it very much. I thought it was good. The best compliment I think I can give it is that it could have been a Marvel movie. It would have fit in perfectly. It would fit in just right with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not very much at all like the DC movies, which is a high compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it truly is.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I didn't think it didn't like blow me away as being the best movie I'd ever seen. But I will say that I also sort of watched it as two different people. Adult me enjoying it as a superhero movie and like 5-year-old me crying through the whole thing because it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life.
That's amazing.
I did enjoy it on both those levels simultaneously. Yeah, it's hard to explain or describe, but it really did get to this, that inner me, that like little me that used to wear the underoos. And it was just very awe-inspiring to see her so well realized on the big screen. It was fun.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I think that sums up a lot of the ways people have felt about it. It's more about like the intimate meaning that it has to people and the kind of resonance that it has seeing Wonder Woman on screen rather than necessarily the film as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good movie, very entertaining. Yeah. I did enjoy it. So we should get on with our show. As we said, we're going to talk about this Bill Maher kerfuffle. not at great length, but I did want to address it. I know this is already like old news at this point, but we only record once a week. So we're never really like right on top of things when they're happening. But as many people may know, Bill Maher was interviewing Senator Ben Sasse, Republican from Nebraska, and he made a joke about visiting Nebraska, and Ben Sasse said, "You're welcome to come. You can come work in the fields with us." And Maher responded, "Work in the fields, Senator, I'm a House N-word."
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's not a funny joke.
It's not okay to say that word if you're white.
It's just not. It's just don't do it. Like, why would you do it?
That's the worst kind of liberalism. That, like, hey, I have a black friend, and maybe they once said it was okay for me to say it. And anyway, exactly. There's bigger problems. At least I'm not a racist.
To Bill Maher's credit, he did apologize, which quite surprised me because that's not his typical approach. He usually does, you know, stands by his comedy and tells people to lighten up and, you know, resorts to this free speech argument.
Like, I do think, though, it's one of those things where, like, this is really not the time that you can do one of those fake apologies, because you literally said, like, the one word that everyone universally agrees that it's not okay to say. For me, I would just sack him. I think Bill Maher's like a Islamophobic, awful misogynist anyway, right. And I have like no time for him. But in my opinion, white person, N-word, live TV, that is like,
right.
You're done. That's you're your done. Career is over.
There's just no excuse for it. I tend to agree. I mean, Bill Maher, yes, he's a misogynist prick. He's Islamophobic. He's racist. This is all well established. This mm-hmm. is known. And anyone who's been listening to people of color talk about it knows that this is the case.
Right?
But nevertheless, he has this persona of equal opportunity offender. He'll say whatever he wants, and he rides on that.
Yeah.
Which actually kind of brings me to the other thing I wanted to talk about, which is the Kathy Griffin incident, mm-hmm. where she got in a lot of hot water. She got a lot of flack because she posed for this photo shoot where she was holding a mask or fake head of Donald Trump with blood all over it, as if she had decapitated him. And people across the board, across the political spectrum, pretty much everyone was like, that's in bad taste. You can't mm-hmm. do that. It's terrible. And she got fired from her job at CNN doing New Year's Eve. She got fired from her job, not really a job, but like she had a campaign, an ad campaign with Squatty Potty.
Yeah, like a sponsorship or something.
Yeah, sponsorship thing. And they dropped her. And she's losing stand-up gigs, stand-up shows. Like, she's losing income. She's losing jobs. Her career has been seriously disrupted because of this incident. And I think it makes a really interesting comparison to the Bill Maher incident for a number of reasons. One being that Bill Maher was, to use a phrase I don't exactly love, but it's kind of convenient, punching down.
Yeah.
But she was punching up. Very yeah. much so. And like who is harmed by what Kathy Griffin did?
No one. And this is the thing that is my problem. Bill Maher is a racist, right? In my opinion, like, I was brought up in a very radical area that was mm-hmm. like, at the time, was a hotbed for like organization and around like anti-racism, anti-fascism, and like class war stuff. So I know I'm coming from a place of like having very strong viewpoints, but in my idea, like, if you're a racist, you don't get jobs. Like, I'm sorry, right. That's how hard you have to be. Racism is something that kills people. We live right. in a country where 600 or so people were killed by the police last year, black people, you know, right. like, this is a thing that actually changes people's lives. It kills people. It ruins people's lives. It takes away their income. It stops people from getting jobs. People can't, you know, black women can't wear their hair right. naturally. Right. But, and Bill Maher is using the most abhorrent racial slur that plays into that. And he doesn't lose his job.
Right.
He doesn't have people. He has people sticking up for him.
Well, he does. He absolutely does. And he apologized, and HBO apologized. They said it's inexcusable and tasteless, and it won't be in future airings. And even Ben Sasse tweeted, he tweeted about how he wishes he had said something mm-hmm. in the moment, which was good. I mean, I'm really glad he did tweet that. But on the other hand, you're like, well, then why didn't you say something in the moment?
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
There's this whole, I think there's this whole conversation that needs to happen about white people talking to other white people and why we don't say things in the moment and how we need to and how it actually can feel hard, but how it's necessary. And that conversation isn't really happening so much. But what drives me crazy is that the conversation that does happen is, how bad was this faux pas? Is it firing worthy? Where does free speech come in? How far is too far? Where are the lines? Are we thought policing? None of those are the questions that should be asked. The questions that should be asked are what you were just talking about. How does this hurt Black people? Who is harmed by this and how? How can we cause less harm? How can we stop perpetuating racism?
Yeah,
those are the questions.
How come it's still acceptable to make a joke about slavery, something that is a contemporary thing where there are people who in living memory can remember family members and had family members who were slaves? There are people who are still alive who were in segregation. These are not funny jokes, but the thing is, when you look at power balances, you get come back to the Kathy Griffin thing. And I have to say, I don't know much about Kathy Griffin, so I don't know whether in the past she's been problematic. I find that most comedians have been, because edgy comedy was a big deal. But the point is, who did she harm by doing that? Nobody.
Right. And the White House, tried to claim that she really upset Trump's 11-year-old son, Barron. They were saying there's this rumor, which was obviously put out by the White House, saying that Barron saw it on TV and thought it was real. That's so fucking not true.
But
he's
also
11 years old.
And that kid is smart. Yeah. I saw that kid's face when Trump got elected,
yes,
and his face showed the full horror of someone who had exact understanding of what the fuck was about to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, he was not watching it. And I read a really interesting thing of where did they show it? And supposedly the only place that showed it on the television was TMZ. And they showed it once. And then they got enough complaints that they didn't show it. So what's the likelihood that he was watching it? And also, not to be harsh, because I have a lot of, I try and always be positive about children. But what does the damage to one child who's living in a taxpayer mansion, gold tower, what does him being hurt and scared momentarily have to do that makes it, why is that more important than the hundreds of and thousands and millions of Black people and Black children who are being traumatized and murdered? So, Barron Trump is a scared 11-year-old who saw this and thought it was real. But Tamir Rice, who was 12 when he was murdered by the police for having a toy gun and playing in the park, is a grown man who looked scary deserve that,
The 11-year-old girls who were watching TV and saw the President of the United States talk about how he grabs women's pussies.
Mm-hmm.
How about all of the 11-year-old kids whose moms are not documented or undocumented immigrants? And they're watching the news and seeing other undocumented moms getting deported.
Yeah.
How about their
parents? Yeah, kids whose parents are getting, deported when they're picking them up from school and stuff like that. And I think that is really the problem about, I think, this discourse around, problematic celebrities is a lot of the time, if people are being told that they're doing something offensive by a massive group of marginalized people, it is because the power balance is so fucked up that doing something racist when there are racists in the White House has a huge cultural impact
it's
and connotation.
Yeah.
Whereas a woman doing a kind of tasteless, gory joke about, she's going to, because the connotations are very clear. She's going to end the president. She's going to take him down. It doesn't mean she's going to kill him.
All right, let's talk about something more amusing.
That's also about terrible men, but also about terrible people, but also about funny people.
Yes. So this was something you brought to my attention, Rosie. This review of Wonder Woman in Vulture from David Edelstein.
It's wild. I mean, the first thing before we really get into it that I'm so confused about is Vulture has the most incredible woman who writes film for them called Angelica Bastian. And she actually wrote a wonderful review for Roger Ebert this time, but about how much she loved the movie and it was amazing. But she regularly writes for Vulture. And I'm completely baffled as to why they did not turn to her for this review, because their review is it almost beggars belief. It's so bad. He has a history of writing very sexist, strange, almost absurdly misogynistic reviews, and the Wonder Woman one does not disappoint in that way.
When we got home from the movie, my husband Matt sat down to read some reviews, and he Skyped me the link to the David Edelstein one, and he was like, I couldn't get past the first paragraph, which is unusual for Matt because he's not super sensitive to the sorts of things you and I are. Mm-hmm. But even he was like, nope, I will not read the rest of this. Of course, I didn't either until you brought it up. So let's talk about what makes it so amazing. The very first sentence starts, the only grace note in the generally clunky Wonder Woman is its star, the 5'10" Israeli actress and model Gal Gadot, who is somehow the perfect blend of super babe in the woods innocence and mouthiness.
I mean,
can we even break this down? I mean,
you could write a whole dissertation just on that
sentence. I mean, I'm fascinated by the idea that he starts with her height.
Right?
The 5'10" Israeli actress. That her height, I mean, I guess it's relevant in the sense, like, she's Wonder Woman, so she should be tall.
No, see, the thing is, I was like, I was so confused by it. I was like, what? And then I realized that I really do think that this guy, the majority of the reason why he describes women comes from two places. One, because he's like a misogynist and sees women as objects. But two, because I think he's a lazy writer. And that adds, like, you know, 6 extra words to his word count. Because what? You know, because you could just write like 5 speech mark 10. Like, there's other ways of writing if you really wanted to write it. But he really goes for the full, like,
He writes it out completely.
And also, who says inch? You'd just be like 5'10".
That's true. Which is why I think it's purposeful. I think that it reflects some sort of unease that he's experiencing about this large, powerful, but also sexy woman.
Yeah.
Which is a joke within the film, too. But it's funny that he seems to find that to be the very first thing that needs to be noted about her.
Yeah, and I find the very interesting thing as well is, like, he somehow manages to work. He's so ingrained in these kind of sexist tropes that he's been sort of taught as the way of talking about women, that he manages to use the virgin and the whore, the kind of classic dichotomies, in one sentence where he's like, super babe in the woods innocence and mouthiness. And obviously the connotations of mouthiness are you're like a mouthy, you're rude, you're probably like, what, there's a great old English word that they would use, like slattern, where you're like just mouthy and dirty and you say your words. And I was actually in awe of him being able to get in the, she's like a naive, innocent babe, but also she's like horribly mouthy and probably a slut. The connotations are just incredible.
I love super babe in the woods as a construction because, yes, he's talking about her innocence, but that specific phrase also contains babe, which has that sort of double meaning, right? Babe in the woods, meaning naive child, but also she's a babe.
And she's like a super babe.
Yeah, super babe. But the mouthy thing, I mean, that is a misogynistic slur.
Yeah.
To call a woman mouthy, you know, a mouthy broad, she's a woman who speaks out of turn. It's a very interestingly chosen word.
The most famous stuff from the old Wonder Woman comics are the great moments where she is, you know, like telling Steve, like, I won't marry you because then I'll always have to pretend I'm not as good as you. And no woman should have to do that. Or that hilarious bit where she's like, putting some hams on a stick, and she's like, the perfect woman's body, the Nazis will never know the difference. Like, it's jaunty, silly, quippy fun that has like some real radical subversion in the strength of the woman and the strength of an independent woman who works outside of like a patriarchy.
He also says, I didn't miss Linda Carter's buxom apple-cheeked pinup, though.
Oh my God.
It was worth waiting for Godot. So, like, I really wanted to include that quotation because I love that characterization of Linda Carter, who, of course, oh my God, idolized when I was a little kid. Linda Carter was my strong female heroine when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. Yeah. And, buxom apple-cheeked pinup is never a characterization that in a million years would have occurred to me to describe her. Like, that's so,
it's an just, unbelievable misunderstanding.
Well, it's also him coming to it from this really specific point of view of like, how sexy is this woman and why?
I know. And then like, it's so wild because Linda Carter's Wonder Woman is like one of the earliest like mainstream strong female protagonists.
Yeah.
Who really isn't like, yeah, is she beautiful? Yeah. But was she being played for the male gaze, or was she just like a female kind of, you know, Incredible Hulk TV show? Was she a female kind of superhero primetime TV show? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's she amazing.
She was not pinup like, I mean, she wore, you know, like a bustier thing, and she wore the Wonder Woman outfit, but she was not a pinup.
Well, I think the idea is as well, is what it really is telling us again, is about how this guy sees he could be describing any woman, and it would come down to them being this sexualized object.
Long story short, it's a humorously off base review with way too specific a focus on Gal Gadot's physique. So in Slate, we have Christina Cotterucci. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing her name. But Christina wrote this piece called "I Wish Wonder Woman Were as Feminist as It Thinks It Is."
Well, which is just like, first of all, a clickbait title. Because to be honest, if you went in, Wonder Woman doesn't think it, like, in my opinion, I haven't seen Patty Jenkins call it feminist. I haven't seen Gal Gadot call it feminist. I haven't seen Zack Snyder call it feminist. I don't think the creative team in that film thought it was feminist. Like, that's, and that I think is like the first place where this woman goes wrong, because I think her actual, when you read the article, her actual critique and kind of snark is all based and kind of focused at fans, with female fans of the film who enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it like comes off so badly.
Yeah. Which is like super unfeminist in its way. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So yeah, she makes actually some valid and some less so points about the film, from a feminist perspective, right? She talks about how the love story, the heterosexual love story, almost seems there just to make sure you know that Wonder Woman coming from an island of all women is not gay. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a legit point. She talks about how the film barely passes the Bechdel test after Diana leaves Paradise Island, which is true. I mean, and I also thought was, I don't want to say a flaw, but a place where the film could have done better, that There's a pretty fucking awesome 45 minutes where there's only women in this
which I have to say is so rare. Right? Yeah. And I think like, I think that's the problem with this is, and I think that's like what we've been talking about and stuff like off screen and stuff, is like the idea that this Wonder Woman film has to be this feminist, incredible, you know, everything to everyone film, which it's never going to be. And it's not fair to make it be that.
That's the issue, is she comes from, the whole premise she's coming from is wrong. I'm sorry. It's not a feminist film. It's not supposed to be a feminist film. No one is saying it's a feminist film. I mean, maybe some people are, but most of the things I'm reading are just talking about the experience that they had watching it and how empowering it felt and how, what they learned from it, what they got out of it. I have not seen a lot of people or any people in publications saying no. that it's a feminist film.
Well, also as well, the thing that's interesting is like when I read the headline, I was like, oh, maybe it's going to be about, you know, the fact that it should have been more heavily focused on women of color. Maybe it's about the fact that Gal Gadot has like a political history that to some people is incredibly problematic, and that takes away a feminist element. Maybe it's about the fact that it's about war. But right. the actual, I feel like, legitimate criticisms of the feminist aspects of the film are not really covered in here. And
they're
this
not.
Really is, seems so much more to be, like, there's the one line I remember that I read where I was like, this woman is just, I'm not a word I'd use very often, but she's just like a hater. Like, I don't even really yeah. know how else to explain it, because she's like, perhaps I, a person who writes about gender and feminism every day and hasn't even seen enough superhero stuff to be impressed by the mere existence of a female protagonist. It's like, babe, just chill out.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, I write about gender and feminism every day and I watch superhero movies. Like, the two aren't mutually exclusive. And
right.
the condescension.
It's so condescending.
She puts across to the people who really have been moved by this movie. And of course, there's people who enjoy it. There's people who didn't enjoy it. There's people who think it's amazing. There's people who didn't feel like it represented them, you know, and that's the nature of film. But the problem is a greater problem that this woman plays into, which is like, how come men are allowed Batman? How come men are allowed Batman versus Superman, an objectively terrible film that did not make the money that it was meant to make? And they're allowed that, and it doesn't have to be some screed on humanity, and it doesn't have to be, you know, good. It doesn't even have to be good. And they're allowed to have that, and then they're allowed to have 10 more. But women have to rely on this one film that is the first female-led superhero film since, you know, Catwoman in 2003, I think, which was a huge flop because they did not commit the money or the time to that film. And before that, you had Elektra, and then you had... Oh, they might have been around the same time, actually. And then Supergirl. And those are your three movies that you're allowed as a woman. And because they didn't do well.
All right. All right.
Know.
Drink, bitch.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
So the point here is not what criticisms she may have of the movie or not. The point is the whole premise that Wonder Woman is or should be a quote unquote feminist film. It's not. And it doesn't have to be. And a film that women enjoy, that feminists enjoy, a film that women find empowering, a film that women find energizing is great. And let's just mm-hmm. enjoy it for what the fuck it is. And why does Wonder Woman have to be everything? Why yeah. does it have to be a huge hit at the box office, a huge critical success? It has to be perfectly feminist. It has to be everything to everyone or else it's a failure. Just fuck off. It's just it's a superhero movie. It's pretty standard. If you don't like superhero movies, as she said at least twice in this piece, she doesn't, then don't go see it. And sure as shit, don't write about it because you're not the audience for it. And she even says, maybe I'm not the audience for it. You're not. So don't yeah. worry about it. Like, get over it. She writes, I wonder why I'd come into the movie expecting some energizing woke feminist manifesto. Oh. Yeah, I'm wondering that too, because...
Yeah, I'm like, babe, it's a comic book character yeah. created by, like, really created by a dude that's been written by dudes for years that women have made something special because they have brought right. a fandom and a love to it, and female creators have added to it. It's just a superhero movie, and you know what? You're allowed to celebrate it whilst criticizing it and trying to make better stuff, but don't come into it and attack people who enjoyed it for no reason, with no right. valid criticisms.
All right, so this is really exciting. In this episode, we are going to award our very first Hot Sauce Award.
Yay!
Yay! Yes, we've given a couple of weak sauce awards to people who have done things that we found worthy of critique, but this one is for someone who's done something good. So our first ever Hot Sauce Award goes to the mayor of Austin.
Woohoo!
Yeah, he received a letter from a man who was upset about the Alamo Drafthouse all-women Wonder Woman screenings, which we discussed in our last episode.
Oh, yes.
Some folks were all up in arms that the ladies were getting together to watch a movie together. It was very threatening. So this guy wrote a letter. I won't read the whole thing, but a few highlights. He wrote, "I hope every man will boycott Austin and do what he can to diminish Austin and to cause damage to the city's image."
Amazing.
The notion of a woman hero is a fine example of women's eagerness to accept the appearance of achievement without actual achievement.
Yes. Okay. I mean, it's a parable of nonsensical kind of wordsmithing.
Yeah.
Like, nothing he says really makes any sense. It's a lot of empty threats and trying to sound smart when he's not.
He talks about women accepting medals at the Olympics for competing only against other second-class athletes, as he put it.
Oh, my God.
He says, "Name something invented by a woman!"
Which is just incredible.
Yeah, that's...
And I think that's where the mayor of Austin really comes into his own.
Yes, we'll get to that. So he goes on like that to talk about how women are inferior for a bit. And then he says that does Austin stand for gender equality or for kissing up to women? Don't bother to respond. I already know the answer.
Magical.
And then he says, "I do not hate women. I hate their rampant hypocrisy and the hypocrisy of the women's movement. Women do not want gender equality. They want more for women. Do not bother to respond," he says again, "because I am sure your cowardice will generate nothing worthy of reading." It's great because he talks about how women have never accomplished anything and are inferior and second class, but he doesn't hate them. And there's nothing wrong with them wanting equality. So a little bit of a self-contradiction. So the reason that we love the mayor of Austin's response is that it's great. So the mayor of Austin writes back in a beautiful response. "I am writing to alert you that your email account has been hacked by an unfortunate and unusually hostile individual. Please remedy your account's security right away, lest this person's uninformed and sexist rantings give you a bad name. Oh. After all, we men have to look out for each other," which is just beautiful.
I love that he went that way with it. Like, it's so polite and so snarky at the same time. It's just wonderful.
It's great. I mean, you could very easily just be like, "You're an asshole. Everything you say is wrong." But instead, he did this snarky little, "You couldn't possibly be this much of an asshole.
Yeah.
I'll pretend I thought your account was hacked."
It's very beautiful.
And then he goes on to defend women beautifully. "Can you imagine if someone thought that you didn't know women could serve in our combat units now without exclusion? What if someone thought you didn't know that women invented medical syringes, life rafts, fire escapes, central and solar heating, a wartime communication system for radio controlling torpedoes that laid the technological foundations for everything from Wi-Fi to GPS and beer?" I love that. And he goes on like that, continuing with the theme of pretending that the guy's account has been hacked. And he says, he closes it with, "In the future, should your travels take you to Austin, please know that everyone is welcome here, even people like those who wrote that email, whose views are an embarrassment to modernity, decency, and common sense."
So wonderful.
So that is Austin Mayor, I've got to get his name, Adler. Steve Adler.
Thank you, Steve Adler.
Wonderful letter. Beautiful snark, well constructed.
A beautiful response to that hatred that like brought joy to many, many people. Because it was funny.
It was funny.
It was as condescending as it needed to be without being awful. Even though men like that don't really deserve compassion, he managed to do it in a way that gave him the benefit of the doubt. Even though we all knew that it was that guy, you know, he was giving him a chance to learn and go, "Oh, you're right, actually. You know, women did invent something, of course." Very good, exactly. Steve Adler. Well done. Continuing with our positive route, what have you been enjoying at the moment? What's something that you're loving to spend your time doing?
Well, one TV show that I really want to talk about is Talk Show the Game Show on True TV. I'm a little bit biased in bringing up Talk Show the Game Show because it's It stars my dear friend Guy Branum. And I've watched this show develop from a game he used to make people play at parties.
Amazing.
To a stage show, to an actual television program. So it's very dear to my heart in that respect. But it's really a lot of fun. Talk Show the Game Show, it's kind of a talk show and kind of a game show, just like it sounds. He has celebrity and stand-up comics as his guests. And he does, like, sit behind a desk and do a talk show format. But at the same time, he has a panel of judges that grade the guests on how well they perform as talk show guests. Yeah, it's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they score points based on the things that talk show guests are supposed to do, like name drop, tell anecdotes, humble brag, stuff like that.
Amazing.
It's great. It's wonderful. And if you go on the website, he has a list of rules that he wrote out. And I know Guy wrote them himself because he also went to law school, and it's written like a legal document. It's so thorough and detailed. It's really funny. Yeah, it's very funny. It's everything you like about a talk show, but also none of the stuff that sucks about a talk show. It's got a lightning round and really hilarious jokes and fun. I just have been enjoying the hell out of it. And it's on Wednesday nights on True TV, which was a channel I didn't even know I had, but I guess
amazing.
I do. Yeah. So watch Talk Show the Game Show with Guy Branum.
Good. For me, I've been enjoying my ultimate guilty pleasure, which I only really got to fully indulge in since I got here, which is Lifetime movies, because Lifetime doesn't exist in England, and you very rarely see them.
They're all American,
yeah, and they're very much like a cult thing in England, because they'll just occasionally show them on daytime TV or really late at night. But the other day I watched easily one of the best ones I've ever seen, which was Stalked by My Doctor, which stars Eric Roberts as this absolutely wild old guy who falls in love with like teenagers and then stalks them, and it's super horror movie-ish, and it's got like Final Girls, like it's like a slasher movie. All the women are the heroes. A lot of them are directed by women. I think this one was directed by Vanessa Paris, I think her name is. But yeah, it was great, super trashy. But I find like Lifetime movies are one of those things where they are in no way perfect. They're incredibly flawed, but in their own way, they're very subversive because they have predominantly female casts. The heroes That's are always true. Women, and a lot of the time, the bad guys are men who sort of utilize patriarchal tropes like mental institutions or being very rich to kind of try and subdue women, and then women fight back and team up against them. So I enjoy
very interesting take.
Yeah, they're definitely, it's definitely the thing that I love the most, that I know is the most problematic thing that I love. But yeah, Stalked by My Doctor, super trashy, very good. And and Stalked by My Doctor 2, which was on straight afterwards, which was, I know, amazing. The Return,
but
I believe.
Did it live up to the original? I mean, sequels so rarely do.
No, do you know what it did? Because I have to say, a lot of Lifetime movies, the problem with them is they're quite subtle till right till the end. Like, they'll be, like, quite subdued. But Eric Robert, he is just chewing up the screen. Like, from the moment those films start, he's, like, declaring his love for, like, 16-year-olds and just generally being the worst, most wild bad guy ever. So no, very, very good, both of those.
Well, that's what you hire him for, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
I mean, you're hiring an Eric Roberts, I feel like there's a specific thing you're going for.
Exactly. Amazing.
So, okay. So we have a few bits of listener feedback. Sorry.
Oh, very
that
nice.
I wanted to read. Let's see. Alexis Sergio on Twitter, at Trans Comics, calls us an amazing dream team of a podcast.
Oh, I love Alexis.
Rosie Marks and at Gynostar are both massive forces, and the podcast was fantastic in calling out shit.
I feel like I would use that as a pull quote if we were a book.
I know, isn't that great? I love that.
Thank you, Alexis.
Yes, thank you so much. We're really glad you enjoyed it. Amy Garvey at Lamey Garbage which is a great, great handle, said, "This is great about our first episode. Really enjoyed the discussion of The Handmaid's Tale. Can't wait to find out who the next week's sauce winner is." And of course, that was in our previous episode. We gave it to the Wonder Woman marketing team.
We did.
So we definitely want to hear from everyone, all three or four of you. I don't know how many listeners we have, but if you have any feedback for us, you can tweet at us. We're at Sauce Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
We also have an email account, saucepodcast@gmail.com. You know, we went through the trouble of setting up this Gmail. You should definitely send us something.
You can send us questions. You can send us feedback.
Comments. We want to hear your opinions. Were we wrong? Because probably. And we're open to hearing about it. Also, if you know, you go to our website, which is saucepodcast.com, there's like a contact form, which you could fill out too. But we really encourage you to do that. You can rate us on iTunes.
Yes.
Leave reviews on iTunes. We would love that. Tell your friends. And next week, we'll be back with some more half-informed and slightly drunk opinions.
The best kind of opinions.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.